Height of the campaign season here on a local level. Pleased to be able to bring you this debate that was recorded with David Bellamy and Commissioner Jeremy Matlow. And meanwhile, I've got Wayne Hooks. He's with the Civil Air Patrol joining us to talk more about this remarkable organization. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 75 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
My friend, we are so blessed to have you with us on this occasion when we're going to have an opportunity to hear Commissioner Jeremy Matlow and candidate for City Commission Seat 3, David Bellamy, squaring off in this debate that was hosted now a couple of weeks back with the folks called NEBA, the Network of Entrepreneurs and Business Advocates, I believe is their moniker. NEBA was good about sponsoring, as they have for many of these races, this opportunity to bring together two candidates who, in many respects, are quite similar, I think. I'm just listening to the two of them at length in this particular debate is entirely worth your time, because they really are able to, I think, better articulate than often is given such dialogue with the uniqueness of their perspectives. And as I say, and yet there's this common concern for the welfare of the community. The matter of what is considered the best public concern, the best good for the greatest number. That's where the differences of opinion occur. And now, interestingly enough, and you're going to hear this, Commissioner Matlow doesn't really give to a lot of the criticism that his opponent brings. He pivots and he begins to try to bring more focus to what has been his perspective during his first term of office, what it was initially that got him elected. And basically, if you're not familiar, it's a pretty simple message that says, this is our town, this is all of Tallahassee, we are all participating in it, but we're not all granted the same access, we'd say, or opportunities for success. Economically, socially, culturally, certain neighborhoods that are pretty much just left out on their own. They're just isolated. And so Bellamy comes back to him to say, well, you know, you haven't done anything. You haven't achieved any of those things you set out to do. And by the way, you know, one of your biggest endorsements came from then Mayor Gillum, who of late has has made additional headlines for some of his misdeeds. So there's this effort to kind of paint Matlow as another one of these individuals who just serves their own personal interest and not necessarily looks out for the welfare of the community. I think you'll find Commissioner Matlow's ability to respond to that not only pretty substantial, but he takes it a step further by using that opportunity to say, no, let's talk about what's really at stake here. Corruption is a real thing that continues, and it's not over yet, folks. there's a number of reasons to think that there are other players in this whole saga that have yet to come to light. But according to Matlow, the business of doing the best we can for the greatest number of people has to go well beyond some concerns about some bad actors. And let's just look more clearly, more directly, at how we do business. What are the rules of the road, we might say? And he goes about trying to lay that out pretty clearly. It's remarkably lucid, I think, this exchange between the two of them. You really get a sense of their differences of opinion. But I also hear in them both a sincerity. I don't hear either of them, and that's where I think they're similar in some respects, that is to the devotion they have for the communities that they purport to serve. So, you know, I wish we could say that that's always the case whenever you're listening to people seeking public office or who may be in public office. It's not been my experience thus far. So we'll hope for the best. But I think you're going to enjoy having that opportunity, and that'll come up in the entirety of that debate in the second hour of today's broadcast. So you want to make sure you stay tuned for that. Again, the debate with Jeremy Matlow, Commissioner Seat 3 for the city of Tallahassee, and his opponent seeking that same office, Dr. David Bellamy. So then in the first hour, we've got an opportunity to hear from this remarkable person, Wayne Hooks. He has been, for most of his life, in some capacity in public service of his own fashioning, most recently and principally through the Civil Air Patrol. He serves as a captain with Civil Air Patrol, a remarkable organization with a remarkable history. This is an organization that has a membership, 56,000 members that devote their time, energy, and expertise toward the well-being of communities around the country. And they're also involved in promoting aviation and related fields through the aerospace STEM educational programs that they help offer. And they do so with their cadet program, so young people are able to join up. So that's a very cool thing. And then Wayne will tell us a lot about this program that they've initiated called Wreaths Across America, where they place these balsam wreaths at grave sites in national cemeteries around the country at Christmas time. It's a remarkable opportunity to express devotion and support for our nation's military and their families. All right, well, so that's what's going on in the show today, and I've got a couple of other announcements before I move on. This is regarding a new National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number, that is to say, beginning July 16, 2022, the telecommunications companies across the country have made the number 988 the dialing code for a suicide prevention lifeline. This is actually by way of the FCC, was designated back in 2022, 2 years ago. They designated 988 as the new three-digit number for this National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. All right, so you hit 988 and you're immediately put in touch with mental health and suicide crisis volunteers, professionals, and such. Again, the number is 988. 211 Big Bend, which has been our local National Suicide Prevention Lifeline partner for many years, does so by responding to calls for 14 counties across Northwest Florida. It's a big piece of land, man. So in that case, we want to make sure that you are aware of it. Make note of it. 988 is the suicide prevention hotline for local and around the country. Folks, we've got more coming up. Stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Founded on December 1, 1941, Civil Air Patrol was designed to mobilize the nation's civilian aviation resources for National Defense Service. CAP, as it's referred to, has evolved into a premier public service organization that still carries out emergency service missions when needed, both in the air and on the ground. Well, Captain Wayne Hooks is serving faithfully in the local Civil Air Patrol, the local squadron, as well as at the group level here in Tallahassee. And we're going to welcome him. Wayne Hooks is our guest. How are you, Captain?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
It's a pleasure to have you with us. You have been a volunteer with the Civil Air Patrol now for 10 years. I think you said when you did so when your son joined as part of the cadet program. That must have been sort of a nice connection there between you and your son, huh?
Yeah, he shoved me into it.
He did.
At 14, I got him into the Civil Air Patrol as a cadet.
Mm-hmm.
The cadet program offers a lot of things to them.
I see.
One, it gives them structure, which is paramount.
Right.
We teach them military customs and courtesies and how to wear the uniform, physical fitness. We teach them four core values: integrity, volunteer service, excellence above all others, and respect. Now, I would submit to you that if we could get a lot more adults in this country to adhere to those four core values,
yes,
this country would be better and stronger than it is now.
Yes.
So it seemed like something that would be good for him. And coming from a military background, I mean, my dad was 20 years in the Air Force. My mother was a WAF. Nobody knows what the Women's Air Force is, but she was in it.
She was there.
And so, yes, I bleed Air Force blue when I get cut. I guess I'm the black sheep of the family because I went in the Army. But so I got him in that, and then he said, well, Dad, you're there every time the doors are open because I am. You might as well do something. And now he's graduated the program doing adult things, and I'm still doing this.
You're also involved in something called Wreaths Across America, which basically presents, I guess, Christmas wreaths, right?
Well,
tell us about this program.
I'm the location coordinator for Wreaths Across America for the Tallahassee National Cemetery, and now I just recently established a second location at Oakland Cemetery, which is kind of in the heart of downtown behind the governor's mansion.
Right, right.
And what happens is we honor veterans' grave sites with a live balsam wreath. And the organization, well, It started in 1992 when Oral Worcester of the Worcester Wreath Company up in Maine had an overrun of wreaths. Mm. He had 5,000 extra wreaths. Well, when he was a paper boy, he won a contest and got to go to Arlington Cemetery.
Uh-huh.
And that marked him for life. So when this happened, he could think of nothing better than to put these wreaths at Arlington. And because, I mean, they're live wreaths. You can't save them till next year.
Sure.
And so he contacted his senator from Maine, and she made the arrangements, and they went out and laid 5,000 wreaths the first year. Wow. They went along quietly doing that until 2005, when all of a sudden now we have this new thing we didn't have before called the Internet. Well, Arlington had a website, and that year they went, they laid the wreaths, and they went back to Maine, and that night it snowed in Arlington, and the photographer of Arlington Cemetery went out and took a picture of the snow-covered wreaths on all of the grave sites and put that on the Internet.
Wow.
And that spurred, you know, public wanting to know, well, how can I get that? I want my dad to have one, my son to have one. He got a 60 Minutes interview about the whole program. And in 2006, Civil Air Patrol got involved as a corporate sponsor. And in 2007, it became official that Wreaths Across America was a nonprofit organization.
Wow, cool.
So, not with my Civil Air Patrol hat on, but with Civil Air Patrol involvement, I'm the location coordinator for this national cemetery.
I see.
And so what I do
is
going...
Which is a beautiful facility, by
the way. Oh, my goodness, what a wonderful...
If anybody has not taken the opportunity, sitting here in
the director and his staff are amazing.
Yep.
If you haven't been, I don't care if you have someone in that cemetery or not, if you haven't been out there, you need to go. You'll drive away a patriot.
It's inspiring.
I promise you will.
Yeah.
And so, and this year we've got a little over 2,000 grave sites we're going to need to honor. Mm. And the way that works is wreaths are $15 a piece, because as nice as Mr. Worcester is, he doesn't have bottomless pockets.
Mm.
And last year, over 29 million wreaths were laid across this country. And so he can't afford that, but Wreaths Across America, you sponsor the wreath for $15. Our squadron sells them. Now, there are three categories of a sponsor you can be, or an organization you can be.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a sponsor that receives money back, which is what our squadron is. We put it into our cadet program. Wreaths are $15. $5 from every wreath goes to the organization that sold the wreath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how we keep the lights on at the squadron building.
Sure.
And keep the cadet program going, because we never want a cadet not to get to go to an activity because his family couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good grief, there's a summer activity in Civil Air Patrol where a kid can go fly in a T-38.
Mm.
How awesome is that? Okay, that's also a $1,000 trip.
Wow.
Not every parent can afford that. If we've got it where we can help them, then we do that.
I see.
The next category is what they call 3 for $2, since they're going to give you $5 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The actual location, the National Cemetery, if you go to their site and get it, that's what's going to happen. If you buy two wreaths, they're going to get three. Because instead of that $5 off of each one going to an organization, it's going to go to another wreath.
I see.
And then the third category is, well, I just want to get wreath sponsored. And wherever they need to go to help, that's where they can go.
Yeah.
So, you know, the National Cemetery, it's a location. Whatever you purchase goes to the National Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last year we were blessed. We got enough wreaths that we were able to honor every grave site in the National Cemetery and just about every veteran's grave site in Leon County.
Wow.
And because a lot of the veteran service organizations get involved. I had a call year before last, it broke my heart because I know the guy's a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the Vietnam Veterans of America chapter together for a long time. He's an Air Force veteran from Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his wife passed away. She's out there.
Oh, my.
She had a brain aneurysm.
Oh, my.
And so, and he found out like 2 weeks before the event, okay, the deadline was hit the 31st of, or the 30th of November, and he's calling me because, and he didn't even know it was me till he heard my voice. Because they just, well, here's the guy, he's the location quarter, here's his phone number, he called the cemetery, and they gave it to him. And when I got on the phone with him, we immediately knew who each other were.
Mm.
But at that point, what I knew was there had been enough wreaths sold to cover every gravesite in the National Cemetery. And so I told him that, you know, I got you. There's a wreath for her. And if you want to be the one to come lay the wreath, come on.
Oh, man.
And he didn't come out. It was a little too soon, and he just couldn't come back out there.
Right.
I kind of expect to see him this year.
Right.
And I had another lady, same thing. It was her brother. And he and her son ended up coming out and laying the wreath on his uncle's gravesite. That was amazing. Thing is this is Tallahassee.
Yes.
And so every year I'm sitting on November 15th with the deadline 2 weeks away and like 800 wreaths, knowing I need 2,000. Now, every year we make it, but y'all, in May I turn 60. And my heart can't take that anymore. I'd really like us to be sitting on about 1,800 wreaths now.
We don't need more stress on Wayne here.
So,
folks, he is doing his very best, and we're going to continue with Captain Wayne Hooks telling us about Civil Air Patrol and this remarkable program, Wreaths Across America. You stay with me. We'll be right back.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you
know? All I need is my brother. Folks, we're back and we're talking with Captain Wayne Hooks, this guy who has for his many years been involved in some fashion, a kind of public service, we'd say. Particularly Civil Air Patrol. I've been with him for 10 years as a volunteer. And Wayne, it's a pleasure to get to talk with somebody who is motivated in the fashion that you are. And by listening to you talk, your own personal history, your father's and mother's military background, and those things that were given to you as a child that have remained pretty strong, passing that along with your own son. You said earlier, you know, where it's really more about how well we serve others rather than how well we serve ourselves. It happens to me, I think, it occurs to me, I should say, that this notion of freedom and liberty, we've just come through celebrating July 4th.
Right.
And then the question, it seems to me, is for what? What is, for what? Why was it worth fighting and dying for freedom from tyranny? How is that any less true now when we are fighting for those things that empower us, really, and certainly entrust us with opportunity? And then the next question is, to do what? Opportunities to serve one another, to bring more good to the world, to figure out how we can all work together, which you do, with this organization. Well, how much better can we bring solutions? How much more can we offer? One of the things that I find interesting about Civil Air Patrol is that adaptation to the landscape over time. Because in your initial days as an organization, this goes back, you know, World War II, you guys were tasked with carrying out what otherwise are just military operations. I mean, you were doing surveillance. Right, reconnaissance, right?
Correct.
All along the East Coast and the West Coast, or I guess the Gulf. Right. We're looking for submarines, if I'm going to... Tell us more about how that all worked in the early days.
The bricks were being laid in 1937 when Gil Rob Wilson started trying to figure out how to keep American flyers flying
if
they weren't
wearing
a uniform.
He was the principal founder of this.
He really was. He at that time, because and the organization still exists to this day, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, or what they all lovingly refer to as AOPA.
Okay.
He was the president of it at that time.
I see.
And he to him, the handwriting was on the wall because, you know, even in 1937, Hitler was making noise.
I mean.
He was trying to get a party up and
if you didn't see it, it's because you didn't want to see it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so come along 1941, when it was getting really hard for civilian flyers to fly at all because everything was going to the war effort, I've told this story many times before. He loaded up with a bunch of flour and overflew all the substations for electricity on the East Coast as far as his plane could go, and dropped bags of flour on them and called them the next day and said, check your facility, you've been bombed. Mm. And that was the final motivation needed for the government
to
take action.
The ultimate wake-up call.
That was the one, because if that had been a bomb.
Your hindquarters are hanging out there in the wind.
There you go.
And you think you're all safe and tucked away. Guess what?
There you go. And so we got signed into being in 1941. We fell under the Department of Civil Defense that Mayor LaGuardia was in charge of at that time. Hmm. And we were the sub hunters. You know, it's the movie 1941 was all centered around people panicking because there was a Japanese submarine off the coast of California. Well, you know, the movie cast was, well, it was no threat because it was broken down. Okay. But the fact of the matter is, submarines off the U.S. coast at the beginning of World War II was a thing. And it was, they wreaked havoc on our shipping channels, and we needed some because we couldn't get goods in and out of the United States because they'd go sink the ship. And so the Civil Air Patrol, that was their job, was to go up and find them. And they started out as merely reconnaissance. And then one day a crew almost got arrested by the Mexican Army because they had to stop off in Mexico and get fuel because they'd flown so long over a German submarine that was stuck on a sandbar, and the Navy never came. Uh-oh. And so they flew as long as they could fly. I mean, the tide came in, the submarine got off the sandbar, was headed out to sea, and they had to turn around and come back. And they, of course, you know, they've gone into another sovereign country.
Right.
And for no good, I mean, they were businessmen, they did business there.
Right.
But that's not what they were doing that day. They were getting gas. And that's what saved them, was people they did business with recognized their plane coming in. And they got back to Mississippi, and that's the day we started dropping bombs. We decided that, okay,
enough,
if we're going
to
do this,
for somebody else
we
got to
have a way
up
to do this.
Yeah.
And our bomb sites were very sophisticated. I don't know if you know much about the Norton bomb site that was in the B-17 and the B-29, but it won't fit in a Piper cup. So they created their own bomb site, which consisted of a bean can, which a cup with a couple of clothespins on it for crosshairs, and a piece of string for windage. And the poor guy in the right seat would lean out the window with his bean can and use that to sight on the submarine.
Wow.
And hand drop a 2-pound bomb.
Oh my gosh.
And try to sink the submarine. And I mean, I've got people telling me that, well, the Germans say all their submarines are accounted for. Well, but I've got newsreel footage from an old Paul Harvey piece talking about a Civil Air Patrol airman who sank a submarine. And we've got the newsreel footage of him dropping the bomb.
Wow.
And so I would submit to you that sunk is accountability. You've been accounted for. You're at the bottom of the sea. So, yeah, we say we sunk too, and so far I've not found anything in my research to say different. So that's what we did, and then we came out of the war.
I would imagine that the threat of that happening had its own role in that, knowing that you guys were now armed and dangerous, maybe that helped to thwart further efforts, but at least to put everybody on notice.
Well, there's in some of our history, because we actually have a little museum at Maxwell Air Force Base that talks about the Civil Air Patrol's history. There's actually a quote in there attributed to a German submarine commander that says a lot of the reason they quit coming to the U.S. coast were those stupid little red and yellow airplanes.
See?
And we'll take
that. Stupid. Yeah, that's us. Stupid
that would be
enough
us
to try. Exactly.
So, we'll do that. So, and then in 1948, foreign intervention was not really a threat. And mm-hmm. so we sat down with the Department of the Army, mm-hmm. because it, you know, the Air Force was still the Army Air Corps then.
Sure, sure.
Figured out what we were going to do, got Harry Truman to sign it, and well, then our bomb dropping days were over, mm-hmm. and we started doing more of the things that we do
the
now.
The mission changed, but the heart remained the same, it
yes.
seems to me. Civil Air Patrol, it's called. We've got Captain Wayne Hooks doing a good job of helping us better appreciate the significance of this organization, all to do with Americans' well-being and those around the world, our allies and various nations. This is the work of Civil Air Patrol, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. You can find us online at TallahasseeTalks.com.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Folks, we're back and we're talking with Wayne Hooks. Now, this is a guy who, if you've just tuned in, has spent his whole life, as far as I can tell, and he's a young man. He's only, what'd you say, 60 years old?
60. Yeah.
Come on, man. You haven't even, you got another 30 years ahead of you at least.
Let's hope.
And the fact is, you have spent those 60 years, give or take, having been brought into this world with something very fundamental, I think, that shows up a lot among those people I talk to and have talked to over the last 10 years on this show. When it comes to any kind of consistent pursuit of public welfare or the pursuit of the welfare of individuals as opportunity gives you, who have specific needs, particular types of services that aim at a type of person or a group of people that are in a similar set of circumstances. And right. So I'm thinking of Wreaths Across America,
yes,
as a good example. I mean, it's one example of the many things that you have done with your own career. But at the same time, it pinpoints those whose military service is recognized in these various military national cemeteries around the country and yes. other places, veterans and their families who yes. have in their history made that ultimate commitment, you know, to stand in the gap.
Yes.
I digress a bit here, but I take the opportunity to say, that's more than just heroism.
Yes.
That's more than just believing in patriotism or, you know, love of country. Now, to me, this is you putting yourself in the shoes of that spouse, that child,
yes,
that family, and saying, if I were in their situation, I had lost a loved one who had served this country in military service, mm-hmm. what would it feel like for me to go out there on a Christmas morning and find a balsam wreath laying at their graveside?
There you go. And that's what, I mean, a very, very dear friend of mine here in Tallahassee says every time he gets an opportunity to speak publicly about veterans, a veteran is someone who at some point in his life wrote a blank check to the United States of America for an amount up to and including his life. And what we see out there are the ones that cashed the check in full. Whether it was while they were serving in a combat zone, whether it was in the case of a lot of veterans, they came home and they were dead and they just didn't know it yet. Because of things like Agent Orange and different things you run into in a combat zone. We have 22 veterans a day right now. Today, we have 22 veterans a day committing suicide because they can't live with what they saw or did.
The disease that lingers.
And so
that lays below beneath the surface.
The very, very, very least we can do is go out there one day a year and honor those heroes. And I get a little strong when I say that, but that's something that's really important to me. And this is something that all through our history, I mean, Jimmy Doolittle and his crew knew they weren't going to make it back. They absolutely, they couldn't put enough fuel in the plane to get back and still get off the deck of the carrier. So they knew they were going down before that mission was over. And they did it anyway, because that wasn't just going to help the United States, that was going to help the world. And, you know, these are the kinds of things, the guys that went up and dropped the atomic bombs, they didn't know what that was going to do to them. I mean, to the point that I forget which of the two missions it was. They went up, they dropped the bomb, they saw the cloud come up, and the pilot banked around and flew through the cloud and said, okay, so, you know, for prosperity, you can say you flew through a nuclear cloud. You know, I don't know what the outcome was for that crew years and years later. But, you know, those are the kinds of things either they, whether they did or didn't know. You know, the story you just told, I mean, that's going on all over the world all the time.
Think about that, too, Wayne. If you've watched Gary Sinise, Gary Oldman, Sinise, another patriot.
Yes.
But Gary Oldman's portrayal of Churchill.
Yes.
The Darkest Days. And the whole notion that this one leader, who otherwise was really not very popular among his own party or the other, but he was at the right place at the right time. And he stood up to say, no, we are not going to let this prevail.
Correct.
And he's faced with losing his entire armed force, 300,000 soldiers stranded there at Dunkirk.
Yep.
And he has this horrifying decision he has to make. He's got to have these guys there at Calais distract German forces enough to buy him some time, not even knowing whether this is going to work.
Right.
What he's trying to do is get enough of these, you know, amateur ferrymen, basically, boatmen, to come sailing across the channel
and
ferry these guys back to the island.
Right.
Back to England. It worked, but at the cost of what? All of those guys, those 4,000 soldiers in Calais were killed.
There you go.
And he had to give that order.
And here's a man that was so unpopular, the very next election he was voted out as prime minister. But yet he had enough of ability to motivate that he motivated England to go win their part of the war.
Right.
So.
Right.
And we've got that walking around this country.
We
have heroes like that.
We do.
And I hope that when their days comes, I can find enough people that are willing to spend to buy a wreath that we can honor that gravesite
for. I think certainly you have pulled us closer to understanding what it means to care for someone who has lost a loved one, especially that one who has served this country in the manner of military service. So, my friend, I salute you, and I appreciate the devotion that you have personally and the organization to this effort. And we will continue to remind our listeners that they need to get involved, and they need to give as much as they can to help you put those wreaths at those gravesides.
They can do that, and they can come serve with the Civil Air Patrol.
That would be
a great
thing,
too. We're all volunteers. We all do it. in our spare time, and that can happen. So we can give them ways to serve if they are so motivated.
Sounds good. My friends, I hope you're paying attention. Make note of this. It's called Civil Air Patrol. Captain Wayne Hooks, our guest. We are pleased to have him with us today and glad that we've had a chance to get to know all about this. Thanks for being with us, Wayne.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, that's what I have for you here at the moment. We're going to continue with more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny after the top of the hour, so stay with me.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Welcome back to the second hour. Here we are, Tallahassee Talks, and on this occasion we'll spend the entire hour of this fine radio broadcast bringing you this debate between City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow and Dr. David Bellamy, who is running against him in this upcoming election. So stay with me, and we'll begin right now.
So this question is going to start with you, Commissioner Matlow. As we all know, Andrew Gillum is in the headlines as of late last week. He was indicted recently, right, if you hadn't heard about it. So he endorsed you, Commissioner, for your first round. And Gillum, the former mayor, claims that this indictment is a political hit job. So my question to you to open this up is, do you agree with your friend?
Let me start by saying this is exactly what we've been trying to say for the last 4 years. Corruption in our city has run rampant. And I think we got to start by saying it's not a Democrat problem. It's not a Republican problem. If it's your team, my team, none of that matters. What we need to fix in Tallahassee transcends above any individual person. You know, I've been told for 4 years that corruption in Tallahassee was the result of one person, that there's no more corruption because Scott Maddox was indicted and went to jail. If we look at what's played out in our city over the last few years, we know that's not true. We know it's not true because of what was revealed in the FBI investigation. We saw text messages from a lot of political players trying to put in place city managers, trying to put in place Ben Pinnegree at Blueprint. All those people are still employed at the city of Tallahassee. And yes, there were text messages between Andrew Gillum and Scott Maddox as well. We can't hide from that. Do I think the FBI conducts investigations to be political? No, I don't. I don't think that's the case. But as we look at what's happened in our community, we have to find the solutions and we have to work together to get there. And we've been called uncivil for raising these issues. We've been attacked repeatedly and told to move on and move forward. And I'm not going to move on until we have an honest and transparent government in the city of Tallahassee. Thank you.
Dr. Bellamy, same question for you. What does this indictment say about Tallahassee politics and government? And what would you do, you know, to change the dynamics that we're addressing here?
Well, first off, I'd like to apologize for not pre-registering. I don't think this is necessarily new news. I think many of us thought this was coming. I'm not surprised by it. So, again, it's not a shocking revelation that it occurred. I think what we've got to do is expect more of the people that run for office. You've got to elect people that are always honest, truthful, straightforward, or don't complain when you get politicians in office who are not honest, straightforward, and truthful. And I do feel the need to point out that much of Jeremy's campaign has often been, look who's connected with Maddox, who's connected with the corruption. Using that same rationale, I would be saying you shouldn't be in office because of your connection to Gillum. I don't think that's the case. I don't think you knew anything about Gillum. But it does need to be pointed out that the very things you say about me in regards to people who got into trouble could be said about you. And hopefully we can set all that aside and start talking about the issues.
Rebuttal?
Yes, and we're having two different conversations here. One about what happened in 2018, which I think the courts will settle 100% completely, and one about campaigns we're engaging in right now. In Tallahassee, we've had a closed political system where the same big money, the same special interests flood hundreds of thousands of dollars into campaigns. And what do they get in rewards for it? You can just go look at the city's checkbook and see millions of dollars in public contracts going to companies from the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce. Why does that happen? Because they flood money into people's campaigns. And he wants to hide from his connections to Scott Maddox, but the truth is, all of Scott Maddox's funders, all of the big money is flowing into his campaign. He just started a political committee that's funded by a developer that was in the FBI text messages asking for special favors, and Scott Maddox said he could get it done. And before Scott Maddox went to prison, he was reaching out to people on David Bellamy's behalf. So no, I do think it's relevant to this conversation.
Did you want to rebut that?
You know, I don't know who he was reaching out to on my behalf, but he didn't reach out to me. Again, it's not relevant. If you can have a close relationship with Gillum, I can have a distant one with Maddox.
Okay, since we're talking mayors, let's stay along that vein. Dr. Bellamy, both of you were here last month for our mayoral debate. So you had a chance to listen to the candidates. You both have seen their campaigns. Dr. Bellamy, who are you going to support for mayor and why?
So I am staying in my own lane. I've got my own race to run, and I'm not getting involved in the other two. I have been friends with Daley since we were kids. We weren't close friends. We grew up with our parents working alongside. My mom was the mayor when his dad was on the school board. And I love Christian Dozier's parents. I don't know her well. But I'm staying out of that. I've got my own race to run.
Commissioner Matlow, the same question for you.
Sure. It was a pleasure attending that debate. And I love it when there's multiple candidates, because you can really see people who you never expected to run for office, like Michael Abraham, who I thought put on a tremendous showing. I mean, the unfortunate reality in politics is big money and connections really will drive people to the top. And I think that's unfortunate. But right now, I don't think I'm looking for a candidate of mayor that's going to step up and be the leader our community deserves to end corruption, get rid of people who are doing bad things, get your hands off of political procurements, get the political hand off of hires, and lead with integrity. Right now, I don't see a candidate for mayor that stepped up to fill that role.
Okay. Before we go off the mayor and go to something else here, what happens if Mayor Daley does get reelected? This is for you, Commissioner Matlow. I mean, how will you work with Mayor Daley to build consensus?
Sure. And you know, people love to play up division and where people butt heads. And where we butt heads, I think, are on the most important issues in our community. But the truth is, me and John Daley have found a lot of common ground. You know, we worked hand in hand to deliver the ethics reform package. We pushed that into a majority. It had a lot of public opposition. I was disappointed he wouldn't help us close the lobbyist loophole, but nevertheless, there were a lot of great reforms that expanded the impact of the Independent Ethics Board, and we accomplished real things. We worked together on the teams unit, so when law enforcement responds to mental health issues, it's not, there's somebody with mental health training background, there's a firefighter, because we're looking at our community holistically and how we can stop locking people up who maybe need mental health treatment. And there's a various other issues that we work hand in hand on. People don't like to put that on the front page. You know, conflict always right to the top. So where I can find common ground with the mayor, where he wants to work with me, and where I can work with him, we'll continue to do that. That's what we've done for the last 4 years.
Dr. Bellamy, do you believe that Commissioner Matlow is a consensus builder? And what would you do differently if elected?
I don't think he's a consensus builder. I think he means well to what he wants to do, but I don't think he has the ability to really compromise, to make deals, to reach across the aisle. I think his behavior has demonstrated that it's got to be his way or it won't get done.
You're listening to a debate that was hosted some weeks ago between Jeremy Matlow, City Commissioner, and Dr. David Bellamy.
In 1945, Jack Whidden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whidden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whidden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whidden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whidden wanted, and it's been the Whidden way of doing business for over 75 years. Whidden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whidden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or WhiddenGlass.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
You're listening to a debate that was hosted some weeks ago between Jeremy Matlow, City Commissioner, and Dr. David Bellamy. Let's continue.
I mean, you said bumping heads. I love bumping heads. I've never read a book about a good general who didn't sit down with his staff and tell them what the plan was and make every single one at the table tell them what was wrong with it. That's how you grow. That's how you get better ideas. But you've got to be willing to reach across the aisle. I mean, who knows what kind of compromise could have been reached if Jeremy had returned the call of the boosters president. You can't work with the police department if you won't talk with the police chief. So I think he means well. But meaning well might as well be at the bottom of a bottomless pit. You've got to bring results, and you've got to be able to compromise and deal with people.
1 minute, please.
Thank you, Patrick. And honestly, I'm proud of the bipartisan consensus that we've been able to build this community on some of the most detrimental issues, both the Children's Services Tax. I was opposed to this tax because I said it would be another slush fund, just like Blueprint, where well-connected people would get their hands in it. The first results just came out, and the Chamber of Commerce is getting $100,000 of children's money. That, to me, is ludicrous. And if you go on the website that's being funded, it says on it, this website is not designed for children. I also built a broad partisan coalition working with Barney Bishop to oppose that. And everything we said about the tax came true. We built a bipartisan coalition to oppose funding for a $27 million giveaway to Doak Campbell Stadium with Americans for Prosperity, because 80% of our community doesn't want to see us waste our money like that. Consensus is happening in our community. It's just a lot of times our leaders aren't voting what the consensus of our community is.
Did you want a minute, please?
Just again, I think with compromise, being able to reach across aisles, having relationships that work, something could have been done about Doak Campbell. You know, when you vote against the mayor pro tem just out of spite, you've burned a bridge if you ever need the mayor pro tem to support you on something. You've got to be able to work within the system to achieve.
Commissioner Matlow, you brought up the lobbying component. I understand it's going to be coming up for a vote on lobbying and whether or not you can hire ex-felons So there's some insinuations as to who might get hired down the road. So what would be your position on that? And then Dr. Bellamy, I'd ask for your follow-up on that as well.
Sure. First off, I don't think it's an insinuation. It's on Dr. Jackson's shirt, front and center. But we can laugh at the shirt, I believe, but the issue is serious, right? There have been people who have been engaged in very serious wrongdoing, abusing their public office, abusing their behind-the-scenes connections in the community to get things done, and not doing it in the public eye. And I'm very afraid that when people get out of prison in just a couple of years, the people that they put in place at city government will still be there, and they'll be able to lobby those individuals. That's not going to change in 3 years. It's not going to change in 5 years. So I've been on the record, and I wholeheartedly support a lifetime ban on registering to lobby the city of Tallahassee from people convicted of felonies, especially on a services fraud.
Dr. Bellamy, same question.
I agree completely. We should have a law that says if you have committed a felony, especially one of trust, you shouldn't be able to lobby. A lot of the other lobbyist issues I think are pretty simple. If you get paid to go talk to a commissioner on someone's behalf, you're a lobbyist and you should register. But I think we need some consistency in that. I remember at last year when I came and Jeremy said, we've got to end these relationships where you have a campaign manager who's also a close confidant, who's also a lobbyist, who's also your advisor. I agree completely. But in 2019, I believe Mr. Hurley tried to get $35,000 to lobby for CRA money for somebody. You've got to be consistent. If we're not going to deal with lobbyists that are also our friends, our business partners, our campaign people, then we do it across the board. But lobbying should not be that hard to fix. If you get paid to try to influence a commissioner, you're a lobbyist. And if you've committed a felony involving public trust, or maybe any felony for that matter, you should receive a lifetime ban. And for that matter, there should be substantial penalties for breaking the lobbying rules. When you get paid $10,000 to lobby and your fine is $500, it sounds like just the cost of doing business. So we've got to put in substantial penalties for those that break the lobbying rules.
I'm going to start off with you, Commissioner, on a different aspect. NEBA was created in part and parcel because of deficits of the Tallahassee Chamber. You know, the membership, there's different opinions on different aspects of the chamber, but there's a part of us that believe that NEBA is more of an advocate because we don't have as many ties to municipalities, let's say. So I'd be interested in your assessment of the Tallahassee Chamber and how it benefits the community in working with the city.
Sure. I think that there's a lot of value in the Tallahassee Chamber, but I think the way they interact with the city government is not valuable to the community at large. I've never heard a concern come from the Tallahassee Chamber that spoke to the needs of local small businesses. I am a small business owner. I know what our needs are, and I bring those issues to the forefront, but I don't see the chamber stepping up on those. I see the chamber getting in line to support Doak Campbell. I see the chamber getting in line to support certain vendors that their board members have contracts with, but I don't see them looking after the community at large. What I appreciate about NEBA is the people in the room are the people who are operating businesses and going through the struggles every day and really know the impacts. I don't think the chamber even recognizes the impact that Amazon coming to town was going to have on small and local businesses. Does that mean we should say Amazon shouldn't come to town? No, I don't think so. But if we're not thinking about the impacts of 1,000 new jobs in a city where we can barely find employees right now, where we're close to full employment with 3%, that's not even a conversation on their minds. And if you're representing a vast majority of business in Tallahassee, that should be the forefront. That's what we're concerned about. How are we going to fill jobs? You know, how are we going to transition into the new environment after this pandemic? So, you know, I stand with open arms. My door has always been open to the chamber to come and talk about issues that affect the community broadly, the business community broadly. But they've never reached out to have those types of conversations.
Dr. Bellamy, what's your assessment of the Tallahassee Chamber and the business community?
So I don't do much with the chamber as a doctor. I think we're members of it. I think one of our CEOs sits on the board. But my only involvement with the chamber was getting turned down for leadership Tallahassee about 15 years ago. I do think that they need to work on their image. And I'm hoping they've realized that. They've got sort of the first outsider president I think we've had in a long time in Sammy. I think the chamber membership needs to decide, is the chamber doing for them what they want? And if it's not, they need to vote in new leadership or come on over to NEBA. But it's a private group that needs to figure out what they want to do. And if they feel like their interests aren't being represented, then they need to vote other people in. I agree. It looks like the chamber does a better job of serving the upper top. I'll be honest, though. I don't know what they're doing for the smaller business. Maybe nothing, maybe a lot. I don't know. But I do think that if the membership's unhappy, the membership can control who runs it.
But, or the membership can come over here. That's fine.
Just off point. Isn't that the problem, though? A chamber's number one mission should be what they do for their membership. And Dr. Bellamy doesn't even know what they're doing for their membership, even though all the previous chairs of the chamber are supporting his campaign. Did they not talk about it? I mean, that's an issue that needs to be brought to light, because the chamber has had a heavy hand in everything that's happened.
You're listening to a debate that was hosted some weeks ago between Jeremy Matlow, city commissioner, and Dr. David Bellamy.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Seller's Advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Seller's spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Seller's in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
You're listening to a debate that was hosted some weeks ago between Jeremy Matlow, city commissioner, and Dr. David Bellamy. Let's continue.
They're doing job switches for boards of directors at different agencies with elected officials. They're working behind the scenes on all kinds of things. And the main focus that they should be focused on are businesses. None of us can even tell you what they're doing.
Can I say something? I mean, you shouldn't be surprised when they donate to me when you attacked them. That shouldn't be a glaring surprise to anybody. When you make a video saying, I'm coming for you, so-and-so, I'm coming for you, so-and-so, that's a bed you then have to lie in. And the other thing is, you know, it keeps coming up who's donated to me. And I think some of that's because Jeremy's upset that a lot of people are donating to me donated to him the first time when he portrayed himself as someone different, when he said he was for the CSC. So, yes, there's a lot of people donating to me. But I tell you, one of the greatest fundraisers I've had is you. When you offend people like that, you shouldn't be surprised when they donate to me.
And just a follow-up on that, I may have offended Talcor 1, Talcor 2, Talcor 3, Talcor 4, Talcor 5, but that's the problem with our political system is he's talking about companies that never gave to my campaign because I haven't taken money from Stack LLCs. If you own 15 companies, I'm not taking a $1,000 check from each one of you because I think you want something in return for that. And when I look at no-bid land deals that are happening in Tallahassee where no realtors have the opportunity to put that land out and you're getting 6% a commission when nobody else even bid it out, that's a problem. Those are the issues I'm willing to stand up to that Dr. Bellamy's not. But he talked about attacking the chamber. Sometimes saying the unpleasant truth feels like an attack. Scott Maddox very much feels like I attack him. because I say what he has done in our community. My letter about the chamber spoke directly to them completely ignoring the corruption in our community. They were going to have a beach vacation at Amelia Island right when indictments were rolling in. And who did they have? Gary Yordan was the MC. True Leave, associated with JT Burnett, was front and center on it. Companies and people were there that had admitted to paying bribes in a federal investigation, and nobody would act like it even existed. That's not me attacking the chamber. That's me saying, work with us. We can work together to fix this, but we need y'all to come along because we can't do it alone.
Yeah, I didn't get a tone of work with us in that letter to the editor. You know, I think part of the reason money is out of control now is partly due to you and Max. Once you opened Pandora's box and started taking PAC money from out of the state in previous elections, it changed everything. Elections will never be the same here again. And yes, so it makes it so it's if you don't want to take PAC money like that, you've got to raise money. I'm happy to say my donors are pretty much all local.
All right, let's move on. And this leads me to you, Dr. Bellamy, and asking the question of, do you believe the city of Tallahassee is business friendly? You hear these horror stories about permitting, for example, and trying to get a permit, and the months it takes when instead of weeks. We just don't feel on some levels that it's, and I'm speaking on my behalf as well, that it could be more business friendly. Do you agree with that or not? And please elaborate.
Absolutely, it could be more business friendly. Permitting is just one of the things. I have no problem with very strict permitting rules, but I believe that if you meet those criteria, you should get a permit. I think one problem so many folks have is that they go, they get told what's wrong with their permit, they fix it, they come back, they get more stuff added to it, they come back, and retroactively things may be applied to it if an ordinance changes. That makes it so people don't want to build here. Everybody wants a P.F. Chang's. Everybody wants a Cheesecake Factory. Well, P.F. Chang's came here for a week, rode around realtors, talked about the coding system or the permitting system, and said, you know what, that's not for us, we're leaving town. I'm okay with making the rules stricter to get a permit, but you've got to follow them. I think that the way to fix almost all of our problems in this town are through good careers for our impoverished people. That means that when Honda Jet wants to come to Tallahassee, as it did a few years ago, we find a way to make it happen. I am not for corporate welfare, but if helping Honda Jet come here had supplied 100 jobs in 32304, the poorest zip code in the state, then it would not have been welfare, it would have been an investment. So with OEV having 17 businesses looking at Tallahassee as a place to come, we had better be willing to embrace them. Now, I'm not talking about a coal plant on Park Avenue, but we have got to change our mindset. If we want to help the poor, we want to help the hungry, but don't change anything about Tallahassee. I mean, at some point you've got to say, well, then what you mean is you want to help the poor as long as it's zero skin off your back. Again, I don't want to hurt the way Tallahassee looks and feels, but my area of Tallahassee looks and feels good, and there's areas where it looks and feels terrible. And if it takes some sacrifice, we've got to be willing to do that, and we've got to change our image of being a place you don't want to come if you're a business and need to grow.
Commissioner Matlow, same question. If you're reelected, what are you going to do to help Tallahassee become more business friendly?
Sure. I mean, I think if you ask very well-connected businesses, they'll say absolutely it's business friendly. I think if you ask anybody who tried to start something from the ground up and had to go down to City Hall and get bounced around to 15 different departments because nobody knew whose job it was to sign what, nobody knew whose decision-making authority it was what to get a permit, it's a huge problem. Because that was my experience. When I started my business, you know, we went down there with a few thousand bucks and a dream. And we were shut down. They almost laughed in our face. I mean, it really became that close. And it took fighting. They'd come out. They want new things. They wanted the urinal dividers to be 13 inches instead of 12 inches. And we're here on our last dollars, our last pennies in the bank account, just trying to do something great for our community. Because of our determination and perseverance, we did get through and created over 5 locations to date, employing hundreds of people. But I mean, we are just one story of individuals who almost didn't make it because the city government wouldn't help people get open. And it doesn't necessarily get easier when you're more successful. You know, in current projects we have, I can't go down there and tell them because I'd be on the front page of the newspaper saying I'm misusing my position. But there's not a management structure at the city that understands that your permitting department needs to have somebody who can make connections with the electrical department and make sure connections go through. Instead, they say, we can't do it now. It just gets bounced around forever until somebody comes up with a solution 6-9 months down the line. And so it was one of our biggest issues of OEV. This is exactly what the OEV should be doing, being a liaison for local businesses. When you come through the door, they take you every step of the process till you get your CEO and they applaud you. I propose that. It was rejected.
Okay.
It was rejected in favor of a $20 million handout for luxury stadium improvements. That's wrong. That's what we need to change.
Do you want to rebut on that?
Yeah, I think we both agree the permitting system does not work. The difference between the two of us is he's had 4 years to make it better, and I haven't, and it's not any better. And that's not just OEV. I mean, I'm talking the city permitting system that is controlled by the city. I agree, under OEV, it gets hard to change anything. But with the city, that is under your leadership.
Okay. Commissioner Mylow. Do you support the defund the police policies that we've seen in other municipalities across the country?
So I've had a pretty clear stance on this. I think right now we have to fund our police department to handle the calls that they're getting every day. You know, none of our constituents, if they pick up the phone and nobody comes, would be okay with that. But what I do agree with is we are drastically underfunding a lot of services that can reduce the workload of our police department. That was part of the idea of the mental health initiative. You know, in my neighborhood, we see sworn law enforcement officers have to respond to complaints based on individuals experiencing homelessness. This is not, they're not necessarily trained for that. So I do think, yes, we need to fund the responses that are helping people, keeping them out of jail, getting them connected with the resources they need, because not only is that save us money, a whole bunch of money, in the long run, it reduces the crime issues that we're seeing. It provides a stopgap for some of the uncomfortable situations a lot of people find themselves in. So am I saying let's go slash the entire police department and do that first? No, I think you do it first, and then over time, your police department can focus on what we want them focusing on, which is keeping us safe, solving crimes, and reducing violent crime.
You're listening to a debate that was hosted some weeks ago between Jeremy Mylow, City Commissioner, and Dr. David Bellamy. You're listening to a debate that was hosted some weeks ago. Let's continue.
I think we have too many times where a week before a vote's to be made, the suggestion comes out. There's no time for discussion. There's no time for the commissioners to learn about. There's no time for citizens' input. The lawyer for Blueprint, I believe it is, says that when they meet, it doesn't have to be public record. So let's assume that's what the court says. If that's the case, we need to demand earlier release of the recommendations so everybody has an opportunity to be informed and have input.
I got two more questions that are from the members. Let's have a one-minute response and then give you up to 2 minutes for your closing comments, okay? So I'll start with Commissioner Mylow. Do you believe that the commission has an obligation? We're talking about the homeless issue, so let me just preface it that. Do you believe the commission has an obligation to provide homeless transitory housing? And if so, where would you place them, in what neighborhoods and what locations? 1 minute, please.
I do, because when I hear from constituents who either have a concern of something that's happening in their neighborhood, or I talk to people who are experiencing homelessness that live on Gain Street, and by the way, one of them got murdered directly across the street from my business, stabbed to death. It's not safe to live on the streets. It's not safe for people to be out there, and it creates all kinds of issues. So my question is, if not us, who? I don't believe the community is satisfied with the response that we have. And what we know from the homeless housing meeting I called last year where we did get additional funding to address the situations we were seeing during COVID. It's like, these aren't large amounts. We could solve this issue today for half of the price that we spent on Doak Campbell Stadium. When you let that sink in of like real concrete issues that we could be solving, it's huge. So yes.
Dr. Belli?
Absolutely. The cost to society per homeless person is $1,000 a day. And that seems like a lot, but when you think about the extra police services that are needed that cost the city, the extra EMS services that cost the county, when you think about the lost income for a business that they might be in front of, when you think of the lost property values, throw in medical care. I've had homeless patients in the hospital for 6 weeks over something they could have left in 4 days if they had somewhere to go to. $1,000 a day. So for people who say, that doesn't affect me, I don't want to get involved, understand, you're spending the money anyhow. Let's spend it in an organized fashion where we can give both the homeless a quality of life and also keep a quality of life for the people that pay for it. I think that we have to figure out a way to have a place where they can live and feel safe. I think that allowing them to live in the woods and group homes is not safe. You wouldn't let a cancer patient say, hey, I'm just going to go live in the woods. I'll call you later. We wouldn't accept that. Why do we allow that of the mentally ill? LA has these big homeless camps, and a few years ago they killed about 60 people with hepatitis A, because you get hepatitis when you live in an encampment with no running water, taking care of bodily functions and then handling food. It's not a humane way to deal with folks, letting them live like that, especially if it's because of a treatable mental illness.
Since you're a doctor, we'll let you have a few extra seconds there, you know, talking about a health issue. Last question, and then we'll go to closing comments. And this is one of the questions from our members. The Independent Ethics Board ruled that city commissioners and the mayor who serve on committees as part of their job as a commissioner fall under the authority of the Ethics Board. 3 of 5 commissioners voted against that. What is your position on this ruling? And Dr. Bellamy, I'll start with you.
If you're only reason you're on a committee is because you're a city commissioner, that is part of your job as a city commissioner, and you should fall under the ethics committee. I think it was a little weird, though. The question they answered actually was, do we have authority over the county commission? I don't even know why they were discussing that. Does the city have authority over city commissioners when they're on a board that is the only reason you're on that board is because you're a city commissioner? Absolutely, they have authority. It's like Irwin Jackson's, I won't go into it, but Irwin Jackson's got a great point about, what if you're a celebrity judge for a kid's science fair and the dad slips you $100 to give the award to his kid? And the only reason you're a judge is because you're a city commissioner.
Commissioner?
Yeah, and I'm just going
to
be very...
Okay, let's keep it to a minute, then we'll go to closing.
All right, I'm going to be very honest about what this was. Yeah, that was just... by the way, I was on the losing vote trying to bring more accountability and more oversight to the Independent Ethics Board. We were voted down on it. And the reason was because political committees like Grow Tallahassee have been using operatives to file false complaints. Every complaint has been struck down. They thought they were trying to do something to harm me, but I welcome the oversight. The CRA needs to have independent ethical oversight. Blueprint needs to have independent ethical oversight. So while they thought they were throwing a punch at me, they realized a lot of people didn't want to see that type of oversight, because there's a lot of things that are happening in our city that they don't want an independent board to look on it. So I strongly supported. Look, if you're elected on the county, city, CRA, it doesn't matter. You should follow the same rules everybody else does.
And so we reached the end of the debate, and Commissioner, we'll start with you, and Jackie, we'll do 90 seconds for each closing, please. Commissioner?
Sure. Thank you, Patrick, and just thank everybody for coming out today. Also want to thank Dr. Bellamy for a robust debate. This is what it's about. You know, let's put our ideas out there. Let's see who can lead our community the way they want it to be led. You know, I love Tallahassee. That's why I ran for office. It wasn't about a job to me. It wasn't about income. It's been a huge personal sacrifice to represent this community. But I grew up here. I was raised by a single mother of 4 kids, and I know the challenges people in poverty are facing. I've started a business in Tallahassee. I know the challenges small business are facing. And largely, when we went to City Hall before with these issues, it just fell on deaf ears. They didn't want to hear from the public. They didn't want to hear from the people. I didn't know about it at the time. You had to pay money if you wanted to be listened to, but that was the case. That really is why we weren't being listened to. So I'm proud of everything we've accomplished in the last 4 years. Will I get passionate about exposing wrongdoing? Absolutely, every time, because I believe if we don't fix the underlying issues of our community, the debates we have on different neighborhood things, different business issues, we'll never be able to have an open and honest conversation, because I want your opinion, I want your view represented at the city commission when we make decisions. So just in closing, thank y'all for being engaged, because most of the population isn't going to come listen to guys like me speak for an hour about issues they might not even know about, right? But it's important. It's all of our jobs to be engaged and vote your heart. Vote who you think will represent this community. Vote who you think is unafraid to push back against wrongdoing. And I hope to have your support. Thank you.
Dr. Bell, let me close this out.
No, I agree, Jeremy. Thanks for a great debate. And they probably listen to you. You've got some authority. They probably don't want to listen to me for an hour. My great-grandfather moved here in 1918 to take over and start the sociology department at FSU. Ended up being a famous guy there, has a building named after him. My grandfather grew up here. My father grew up here. I grew up here. My kids are growing up here. My mother was the mayor, and I learned from her how to serve your community when it's hurting. She had me start serving my community when I was 14 years old, taking me to my first police explorer meeting. I was probably the only kid who was 15 year old doing CPR in front of the Piggly Wiggly years ago on a poor fellow. I have served this community since I was 14. I became a policeman in 1990. I just resigned a couple of weeks ago to avoid the resign to run law, but I was a police officer here for 32 years, and then I became a doctor and serve my community through that role. I have taken care of this community and served it for more than half my life, and I'd like to continue doing that. I saw that we had the poorest zip code in the entire state, the highest crime rate in the entire state, and Jeremy came along and said he was going to fix that. He was going to stand up for the poor. He was going to work on crime, and I voted for him, and I just haven't seen it. And for that reason, that's why I'm running. We have got to lose those two monikers of highest crime rate and poorest zip code, and I will wake up every day fighting to fix that, and that is a tide that will raise the entire city.
Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.